The Grade Cricketer is a Twitter stream. It's about playing cricket at the grade level.
Boys!
Get a few today, did you?
To be honest with you, I hate grade cricket.
I went into to play for a team called... the name escaped me.
Obviously, sharing's always a big issue, for young kids coming into a senior cricket team.
Tiger was like a witness, please.
A bit of advice, sort of one.
I refer to the great cricketer here and I'll say, this will do a little bit early.
I don't know what episode this is of the Asian Century, but it's another chapter, a historic victory at the Oval. India win by 157 runs thanks to some Jasprit Bumrah dominance. Jonathan Liu is on the show to talk about that. Fawad Ahmed is on the show to talk about many other things. Will the Taliban let Australia play cricket? Dale Steyn retires from cricket. This episode, as they all are, brought to you by Budgie Smuggler. Use the code CHAMP for free custom design. BudgieSmuggler.com. My name is Ian Higgins. Sam Perry is he. Good afternoon, Hezzy lad. A big 24 hours for us.
It is a big 24 hours, yeah. Some stingy eyes, but...
Yeah, why do your eyes sting when you're tired? Sting?
Why do they sting?
We did a live stream last night, a little watch along on the YouTubes there for day five up in London, and we saw it all unfold.
And there had been allegations that us doing a live stream caused a jinx effect on India.
Yeah.
Those people who said that were wrong. Jinxes don't exist at all.
Except for Jinx Rahane.
He still exists just.
Just about.
Just about in that team.
Will he play another game ever? Pez, we got a question in via Patreon from Ben.
Yeah.
He didn't want to give any more information, though he's nicknamed his sign off with Tomo. So make of that what you will. He said, boys, not an RTDC. I'll fucking tell you what it is, Ben. But yeah. I thought this might tickle you.
That's the way.
I was out shopping for furniture in Brisbane recently and saw Marnus and his partner in the same store looking for a dining table. Marnus proceeded to lift the table from one end and commented that it was quite heavy. I was glad to see Marnus applying the same approach for selecting cricket bats to other wooden objects. They left the store soon after, so it mustn't have made a good pickup. Cheers, Tomo. Spying blokes in public. I like that kind of gear.
I like when Marnus is picking up this table. He just somewhere in his peripheral, there's a bloke standing there facing him, full body facing him, just observing the way he's picking up a table.
Yeah.
And doing a calculation in his head, what's the joke here? Yeah, the joke is pickup. Yep. Straight on off the TGC, boys. Oh, he might have sent it to a lot of people.
Yeah, but Marnus was putting a grip on the table as well, so there's that.
The table's quite heavy and walked out. Heavy tables are sort of, it's a sign of a good table, isn't it? A
heavy table?
Yeah, you don't want a light table.
What's this, 210?
Yeah. I'm sure it works the same way. I noticed the other day, speaking of Marnus, he goes that Redlands grade cricket was on KO.
Yeah.
Bit of grade cricket, Brisbane grade cricket on KO Sports.
Yes.
This is non-ad, by the way.
No, but did you also see Crash Craddock did a thing that he was saying that a certain batsman for Redlands had requested the club open up at 6:30.
That's right.
I don't know what kind of club this is. Is this like a gated community? What's going up there with Redlands, the Tigers?
I saw this.
The Tigers? Redlands Tigers?
I think that's right. Yeah. I think that's right. Yeah, he wanted Marnus wanted a 6:45 a.m. net.
Yeah. Before first grade.
Which sort of created a lot of questions for me. Yep. And I know it did for you as well, as reflected in a tweet. But everyone reacted, isn't that wonderful? You know, he's Marnus. He loves the game. He loves the game so much. And such is his dedication to preparation.
He's thirst for runs.
He's thirst. Bloodthirsty. He's prepared to have a 6:45 a.m. net. Mm-hmm. And let's be honest, in the three-format cricket world, just endless content, you need players who have that level, I think. Like it gives me an element. It makes me feel safe that him and Steve Smith love batting so much.
Mate, if your number three is doing that shit before a grade game, that makes you feel good.
That's what you need. So let's just say that and then park it to the side and start asking some questions.
That's right.
Who has a net at 6:45 before a game? Yeah. I don't care what fucking level you play.
A fucking Fruit Loop.
Yeah. Takes all the PR. I'm sure he didn't. He just wanted to have a net. But let's just say he's taken all just the PR from it. Everyone's batting. Like, isn't this wonderful? Yeah. What about the unsung heroes?
Yeah, but now we're talking.
What about the unsung heroes of a 6:45 a.m. net?
Mm-hmm.
So as you pointed out, who's the nameless fourth grader throwing in balls?
That's right.
Why doesn't he get in Crash's article?
Marnus wouldn't even know his name. Call him mate.
Let's go more than this. Who's setting up the nets?
Oh, some nameless volunteer.
Now, when you
Faceless
played.
Faceless volunteer.
faceless.
Faceless, no face. A man with no face.
When you played, did the club have to erect the nets every Tuesday and Thursday, or did faceless people do it?
No, it was just a bloke who came down to training in shorts that were just a little bit too small, a little bit too tight. He used to do it, and then used to just watch from the hill.
Yeah. Was he a teacher?
He used to be.
So one guy could set up the nets at, was it Chatswood, where you guys trained?
Yeah. No, it was more than one person.
Did the club have to do it, though? That's what I'm asking. Like, if you got down at 4 o'clock, well, if you didn't have a job,
like, is that like the government? Like, is it a representative of the club? It was just like a volunteer, just training.
But
volunteers.
Did players, is what I'm asking.
Oh, yeah, that's why you never used to get there at 4 o'clock.
Yeah, well, a lot of people were hanging out for 4 o'clock.
Yeah.
I did for about half a year in my first year, and I worked out. Yeah. I worked out what social strata that put
that's
you in.
That's right. Yeah. Social strata. Yeah.
Because you end up batting first against blokes who get there at 4 o'clock. Yeah, you don't want that.
They're just other batters. So you end up facing like 15 minutes of off spin from number fours in fifth grade.
I still remember like having to set up the nets at Drummoyne, and it was quite a sort of unwieldy thing to do. Like okay. Opening up the what do you call it? It's not a cupboard, like whatever, a shed. But the receptacle that held the nets at Drummoyne, right?
And like a big locker.
Yeah, like a big metal locker.
Yeah.
And so occasionally the ball would hit it as well. But and then you'd pull out like an absolute jumble of fucking net. And like
it reminded me back in the day before AirPods existed, yes. Where you had to get the iPhone headphones with cords, and I'm in a big tangled web.
Exactly.
Of lies.
Except there's like 20 headphones in there.
Yeah.
To untangle.
And there's always one bloke who just thinks he's got the golden arm. It's like, oh no, you just do it this way.
Well,
do you?
And this is what I wanted to say. So like whenever I was putting the nets together, like it was always encouraged that you did things, these one percenters to help the club go. It's like, no, this is what you do. You do the covers, you get the
nets
up.
This is how you play first grade.
This is how you'll be appreciated. Mm. There's no way you're being appreciated for that.
Last thing
you're being denigrated.
Yes.
Okay?
Yeah.
All that appreciation is superficial.
It's actually a humiliation ceremony.
So you'd be there doing it. I'm the least handy person of all time, apart from digital elements.
I hate practical things. No good.
You can sort out the internet around your house. I think you're a 21st century handyman. Just give it to yourself. But anyway. That's another argument I've had at home, but
don't bring your home life to the workplace.
I'm a 21st century handyman.
Yeah. I can get the internet up.
I'd be there holding the nets and stuff. I had no idea what was going on, or I wouldn't want to make any decisive actions with it. And there were 15 other guys who felt the same way. It's the same with covers, but there's always one guy who knew how to do the nets, and that was his thing. That was 75% of his identity, and neither he nor the club know how critical he is or was to making the club work.
Usually he worked in some sort of landscaping field, definitely drove a ute, always had dirty hands.
Yeah, thick hands, calloused hands. You wonder where those hands had been.
He was another teacher.
But really good at putting the nets up.
Really good.
And anytime you tried to take an action, you don't do it like that.
Hey, he'd dad you. Oh, yeah, not that.
Oh, really, dad. Make his fucking hell.
Yeah.
I remember a player at our club actually said that to me. Like I would have been 19. He's worked me out in about 3 weeks. Gee, you talk a lot, but you're not very practical, are you?
Oh shit!
Yeah,
fucking hell. That's the gambit you make. I mean, you make one mistake in this life.
I couldn't really.
Club cricket training. Jesus.
One mistake. You're not meant to make any mistakes. You're meant to be the most homogenous, unseeable. Blended in man possible.
What were you like at covers duty? That was the thing that I hated the most at the start.
When you say like, what was I like? As in, how available was I to do it?
Yeah. So there's two elements. There's weekday covers. So like Friday night covers.
Yeah, Friday night covers. Yeah,
and then there's Saturday morning covers, which is everyone's sort of. If you're late to that, then you're like, oh, you're not a team player.
Yeah.
When actually, what you actually are is that you're smart.
Yes.
So 15 minutes late, I'll accept the fine.
I would help on Fridays when I was younger, doing like uni or something like that, and I was around the corner from the Oval. Like I would do it, albeit reluctantly, but I would do it. But I wasn't driving around picking guys up. Go, come on, let's get the covers going.
No, mate. The amount of times I would have done covers with one other person, now that is some backbreaking work.
Yes, and then when I was in the team doing it, like on a Saturday morning or something, I was quite a passive participant, but a participant nonetheless. But I'm never pretending for a second that I was going to basically traffic, be the traffic instructor.
Yeah, okay.
Of covers. All I learned was that if you were ever trying to direct people around how to fold covers,
yep.
you had to do it decisively. Now, well, like, and you had to disagree with however the other person wanted to do it. Or you're doing it that way. You're going lengthways, are you?
Yeah.
Now, no, you don't do that.
One of the great alpha face-offs is when two teams on a Saturday have to help with the giant covers, and it's like, let's get both teams out there. Now there's two captains who are peacocks competing against each other.
Yeah.
A couple of bulldogs having a big old standoff.
Yeah. Around how, and folding is really the that's the territory upon which they peacock.
Yeah, and now like now you're standing too close to the opposition, which you're not really comfortable with, because
you might even know them outside cricket.
You may well.
You
do.
May be great friends with them, but they've got different training gear on. The colours on them are different. Colours. Yeah,
different colours. Boo!
They're all good. It's like kids from another school at the school social or something. Yeah, it's just a bit off. I mean, they're exactly the same people as you. They could have gone to your school, different world.
Yeah,
they could be in your team, but they're wearing different colours. Yeah. They've got different sponsors on it. You don't recognise that sponsor.
Different sponsor.
Raby McDonald's.
Yeah, from a local part of their community. Yeah. It's like, no, that's foreign to me. No good. Yeah. Don't trust it.
Stonemason something, Rain and Horn. What the fuck's that? I'm not used to wearing that.
Lee's Fortuna Court.
Lee's Fortuna Court.
Yeah.
You know?
Nancy's Rub and Tug.
They didn't need any.
Parramatta Road.
Lee's Fortuna Court didn't need any advertising. Everyone knew fucking who they were. North of the Harbour Bridge. Yeah. That was always strange.
He's wearing red and white. He's an absolute fuckwit. We're wearing red and green. We're good blokes.
You always get jealous, like, and then guys from the other side will be helping you with the covers, and they seem to be enjoying themselves more than you.
Yeah, like, they're much more bonded connection.
And you're like, what jokes have they got? Those jokes seem good. Or are they just trying to look that way so that they look like they're peacocking us humour-wise?
But then you look at them and you're like, oh, that's just strong clubs and nice, like, community there. I don't even play fours there.
Yeah. And then
I shouldn't go there.
Do you think that's just an illusion and they look at you the same way? Well, they're just like, this is a fucking shit club.
the amount of times I saw like guys get 100 against my club, and I thought, mate, that does not count.
If you knew us.
I see this every week, mate. You just happen to be the faceless guy from the opposition this week who scored 100.
Yeah. But it's a mirror image. They just say, like, what you're describing there, and just the entire thought process of like, oh, what are these guys doing? Mm. Like, you could. That's how you fail in cricket. You just talk yourself out of succeeding.
Yeah.
They look better than me. Why are they wearing that? Those sponsors look weird to me. But you look at the guys who succeed. They just don't. The ignorance is bliss. They don't think about these things.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Oh, look at their captain. He's a leader.
That's right. Oh, his shirt is white. How does he wash that? do you have that as well? Or?
Mate, the amount of teams that I played, and I would love to face our bowling.
Oh, mate, exactly. Yeah, anytime, because I've changed clubs like once or twice, and you really aren't scared of your old club.
Yeah.
You're like, oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway.
And that's Marnus playing great cricket.
Hey, it's been a great show.
Hey, he got Khawaja out. Did you see that?
Yeah, I saw that, yeah.
All right, well, we're going to get into England-India, the fourth test there, wrapped up last night. At the Oval. Obviously, we're doing our dailies. We did a live stream last night. You can find all of that on YouTube. The dailies, the audio, you can find at patreon.com/greatcricketer, hashtag RCDC Fridays. Episode 50-something coming up this week.
50-odd.
60-odd.
Yeah, call it 60-odd,
All right. England, Pez, I'll tell you how it goes. How do you want to do this? You're just going to, like, the chronology of the innings? Just we'll sort of walk it through like that way? How do you want to do it?
We've been talking about it every single day.
Well, England won the toss. They chose to bowl, and then they rolled India for 191. And at that point, you might have thought, "Oh, India are right behind the eight ball here." I actually thought 191 was a really solid score, and it kept them alive, because we saw in the last Test match before him, and they got rolled for 78. It was Bangladesh who got rolled for 60 the other night.
I thought it was New Zealand.
No. Well, that was the day before.
Everyone's getting rolled for 60 or 70 over there.
It's actually a good score.
Yeah.
And we should celebrate that.
Yeah.
Wokes returning to the team. Shardul Thakur 57, Kohli 50, and 191 kept them in the game. And then you think this is England's problem. It has been for ages. You got to fucking cash in on that first innings. They scored 290.
They were five for 50.
Sure. They Wokes 50, Ollie Pope 81. His first score above 34 and about 9 years or something. Boys Yadav, 3 for. This is what Joe Root has said after the game as well, that's where you got to cash in. They should have won the game in the first innings. And this has been England's problem, as I was saying before, for so long. First innings runs, they so rarely score more than 250, let alone 300. They scored 400 in the last test match and they won that game by an innings. And there's no coincidence. First innings runs absolutely enormous. For the first time in a long time, Joe Root hasn't gone past 50 in a game, a couple of 30s in this game.
And that's why this game's Root's fault.
That's right.
Everyone supported him in that first. Hey, there was a couple of guys who were prepared to chip in. Pope 81, Wokes 50, Moeen 30-odd, They did their job.
Yeah.
But where was Root's 100?
Mm. And then it just all turned around. Fuck it, just all turned around. Then
it got fucking flat.
It did get very flat. India 466, Rohit Sharma with his first away test century, the eighth of his career, I think. His other seven are in India. We've obviously seen him do wonderful stuff with a white ball, five World Cup centuries in 2019 in England, but away from home, red ball cricket, not his strength. Averages like 29 or some shit, 80 in India. 127 for him. India 466. They set England 368 to win, and then another turnaround from India.
Well, England were 77 without loss overnight going to the fifth day. It was 291 they needed on the fifth day on a pretty docile wicket.
Mm.
And two blokes, I mean, you have to start. You always have to start again.
Start again, boys.
They took the score to 100. So really it was, 260-odd and with a fair bit of cricket to play and no real sign of swing or seam, especially not seam, and minimal movement.
Yeah.
But then a bit of gas taking started happening.
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah, Haseeb Ahmed, who's done okay in this game. He's actually had a pretty decent summer. He's got himself back into the test lineup. He's scored
he's got a 40 or 50 and a 60 now,
and he scored 100 for that county 11 against the India game in the warm up game. He got 100 there. He's batted well here, 63. But he started to like tread water a bit. Then he'd run out Dawid Malan. He played a shocking shot almost earlier. Should have been caught, and then he sort of like. Jadeja got him out of the rough, I suppose, but
he played a terrible shot. He ran out Milan, and then he looked like his head had gone. Really, he was 60 off 190 rocks. People were like, well, are you going for this or not? There's guys in the shed. Well, when he got out, and again, well done to him for coming back from where he's come from. He averaged 10 for about 17 years.
Yeah,
but it was one of those dismissals. You're like, okay, well. He needed to get out, but it sort of felt like it just started the vibe. And, we've said before, India's a vibe team. Mm. And from there, it was sort of pretty regular. India just strangled. And, Michael Maguire, the West Tigers coach, when he was coaching South, brought a boa constrictor into the dressing room sheds once to teach the side about what it's like to strangle another team. He actually just got a snake that strangles.
Yeah.
And I can only imagine he's consulted to the Indian team. Because they strangled from there with a boa constrictor. That's the confluence of my influences in life, Tiger Town and Indian cricket.
That's just professional sport, isn't it? I could tactically show these guys, or I could just bring in a snake.
Yeah, yeah.
Got to show them.
Apparently metaphors are a thing. Why don't I just do it literally? I wonder what the boa constrictor was actually strangling.
Yeah.
Did you have to
bring a batsman down the leg side?
There you go.
Haseeb Ahmed, they were on commentary last night. They were talking about how low his hands are in defence, and there's no doubt he can look pretty solid. But they were talking about like what his struggles could be in Australia, where it obviously bounces more. Well, it used to before the AFL took over, and there's all drop in pitches. But he's like busted his hand a few times. I don't know. I still look at the England top three.
Yeah,
I know. I rate Rory Burns. I think he's going to score thousands of runs for England. But you got Burns. Dom Sibley's still in and around the group. He'll come to Australia.
They're not necessarily around him at the moment. No. But if they got him back, they will be in and around each other.
And then Hamid, I don't know. I mean, this again, just going back to that first innings. Again, it's England's problem. No first innings runs. And without a spinner, I mean, I don't know what they'll do. There's a bit of talk going around about Parkinson playing in the fifth test match at Old Trafford. And obviously he played great cricket out here as well. So that's a great preparation for test cricket. But without a spinner, without runs, great result for Australia overnight because India won by 157 runs. But the whole story of the game is Bumrah's spell, six over spell on a flat pitch, and he got it reversing. He fucking put it into the deck. He absolutely rock and rolled Ollie Pope, and then he outskilled Bairstow with a sublime Yorker. Kohli said it's the top three bowling performances he's ever seen.
Yep, just going to say that. Oh, yeah. I think that the spell last night coupled with the result begs a question about where Bumrah's sitting now, in the world. I mean, I think he was among the best, but it's sort of him and Cummins now, isn't it? And
yeah, well, I mean, I feel like Rabada hasn't played a game in a long time. The West Indies got Kemar Roach. He's towards the end of his career, I suppose.
He's just got that X factor, Bumrah, you know.
And it feels like Bolt and Southee and Wagner, they're much more of a pack. They're a great bowling unit. The Indian team are a great team, and their superstar is Kane Williamson. But I don't know. I mean, it's nice them to get two test series for all eternity, despite them being the best team in the world.
Yeah. It was one of the best spells like I've ever seen.
Yeah.
You know, from,
and it was just quick.
Yeah, it was quick, and just the nothingness that it came from.
Mm.
You know, it was truly game-changing just off the back of what he was able to do with the ball. Because he doesn't, you know, Bumrah is not demonstrative. He doesn't have to yell at people. He doesn't stare at people. He doesn't try and, you know, intangibly make things happen.
Well, you say that. There was a bit going on at Lord's. I mean, Anderson said that he wasn't trying to get him out. He was buying deliberate no balls, and he was trying to kill him. So there was that.
And that's what I like about him. Like, he's got all of those things in his locker without having to, like, look like a coat while he's doing it, basically. And most of the stuff that he does is just absolute skill with the ball. And it's everything. Like, it's pace, it's bounce, it's movement, it's Yorker, it's thought. It really is the full package. And it's better because it looks like he's, you know, clip-clopping in like a horse before he bowls it.
I was thinking about before, like India's now, respect to New Zealand, they fair and square won the World Test Championship final. They were the best team. But India are better. Like, I know you're about to say. I feel like, though, that this feels like it's more than like a great South African team in the early 2000s or the great England team when they came to Australia and they won in the Ashes, ascending to number one in the world. This feels like it's the start of something because there are guys like Bumrah, who is, how is he, 27. He's going to carry the team for a long time. And then because of India's fast bowling ranks, they can now beat anyone all over the world. Yeah. And also the demise slowly of Test cricket feels like it's harder for other nations to ascend back to number one.
It
feels like it's going to be more than like a 2 year, 3 year reign where like one team is the best team. This feels like it actually might be genuinely like a 10 year run of like a dynasty of like a really great team in all three formats.
Mm.
Is that overstating it? That's how I feel. I mean, watching them last night, especially winning in England where they haven't won ever won in England? 86, I think it is.
They've won some series in England before, but I think you're right in the sense that like that win at the Gabba, and look, there's still a game to go here, but they've knocked them over at the Oval. They're 2-1. They can't lose a series. Like they sort of seem to be breaking certain backs that they've not been able to really break before. Yeah. And the question of how long they can sustain the reign, I think, is less to do with like this. You know, they're necessarily being a golden generation of Indian cricketers, but more like one country's system seems now geared towards consistently producing an unbelievable quota of players to come in and out of that side whenever they need to across all three formats. I mean, look at that. They are covered in every skill area, India, and cricket is on the ascent, and their ability to organise to create great players is on the ascent massively. You can't say the same thing about Australia and England, I think, whose systems are more about trying to funnel the best players from young to the top so that they can compete against India's worldies. But everything underneath just feels like it's being hollowed out, you know, and the systems are kind of, they're still holding on at the top, but underneath it's getting pretty shallow with three format cricket, with the competition with other sports and with Netflix. So like, in terms of a reign, that's kind of the fear or the excitement, which is just like, India is coming, you know, these are just little examples. I think Barney described it as, you know, that the hot loss at Headingley was like a, you know, a bump in the road on the way on the, you know, to the eventual place they're coming. And this team, I mean, they've got weaknesses, and England's exposed them, Australia can expose them, but it just feels like he's like Ajinkya Rahane. There's a bit of pressure on his spot. His average probably isn't good enough for who should be batting number five for India. What there's probably no concern over is that someone will come and be able to do it.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh, yeah.
In Australia, if there's we had no a guy averaging... Like,
yeah, but who?
Exactly. Yeah. Like, oh, who's coming through? In India, it's like, mate, take your pick. Mate, go out into the street, someone will be able to do it.
Yeah.
And that's why I think... That's why it's the century, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I was just thinking because they've... If they win in England, they win this series. They've obviously won in Australia the last two times they've been out here. I was just thinking, like, what's left? Because, they can beat anyone in Asia. They can beat the West Indies away from home. Are they still going to South Africa? I don't think that might be a bit on the cards that they might be off. Anyway, they're supposed to go to South Africa. If they win there, then like that might be the last place. But then I was just thinking, no, but they've they got fucking pumped by New Zealand in New Zealand. And so is that the last place? But it's like, okay, when do they go there again? New Zealand are going to India next year for it's either a two or three test series, so which will be great. But can India go to New Zealand? But is New Zealand now the last
bastion?
Yes, yeah. Bastion. Yes,
that's the stupidity of this game. That's New Zealand have knocked over India in the World Test Championship final. Now, realistically, like for the integrity of who the best team is, that should be a series. You know, I understand it probably doesn't stack up commercially. In fact, I'm sure it doesn't stack up commercially.
And with the calendar and shit,
all of that sort of shit. Yeah. But it's a series that kind of sorts the wheat from the chaff in terms of how you play.
Yeah.
So it's so stupid. And such a shame that we can't watch New Zealand in four test series, you know, or four or five test series to see how they go, when you can build up all those narratives, build up the dominance that a player might have over another player, expose weaknesses. And I'm sure no one feels that more keenly than New Zealand, you know, who would be so keen to prove themselves in those situations. But while they can't, we're always going to have, you know, a little bit of like, oh, we love New Zealand, but, you know, they only played two test series.
Yeah.
You
know? Which, well, I mean, both things can be true. I wonder if New Zealand will ever get that recognition where they do eventually get like a four or five test series against, one of the other three big teams. But by that stage, like Bolt, Southey, well, BJ Watling's already retired, Wagner's 36, Kane Williamson isn't that young. And so like this whole generation that's been building for years, Ross Taylor as well. I'm not sure how old Henry Nicholls is, I think he's younger, but. They got this like great team who's been building for ages, but by the time they might get a chance to play four or five test series, then like all those guys would have gone, and they'd be a much weaker team again. You'd think, although at the moment New Zealand have got great depth, especially in pace bowling. But you take my point.
But New Zealand only have to arrange their side to win in the conditions that they're given to win. Whereas I think part of the excellence of the Indian team, and people will say, "Oh, well, you guys are just pandering to India." I mean, you really can just give them credit. I mean, the beauty or the triumph of what they're doing is what they're able to do outside of the conditions that are home to them. Mm. You know, that's the mark of a really good side. And they go to flat wickets India where it's all pretty neutral and they can winkle out a team. They can score the runs they need to score. They can do it away from home, you know, in really foreign conditions. You can't really say that about any other side.
When was the last side that came to Australia and beaten Australia twice in Australia? Mm. Okay, for that first time, sure, if you take Warner and Smith out and Bancroft, it's going to be easier. But they still did that. Then they beat us fair and square last time with the B team, C team. And then who else in the last, like, 50 years has done that and then gone win in England, the same generation of teams?
I mean, South Africa were good for a while there.
South Africa were good for a while.
Able to do that shit, yeah. And obviously Australia beat all comers for a period there as well.
Sure.
So, obviously... You know, the game was notable for four things. Rohit hits breakthrough ton. Shardul Thakur is Mr. Clutch. Bumrah taking his career to the next level. And from England's side, Jarvo.
Yeah.
So, and wouldn't you love a schooner with Jarvo?
I'd break the glass and then I'd stab myself in the eye with it.
Yeah, yourself, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, for some reason,
because that'd be a funny prank.
I can imagine him at a school reunion, you know, like still wearing the white Schlesinger trainers that he wore on the Friday or some shit from Sport Direct.
Yeah.
No, disrespect to Sports Direct, it's just where you get those trainers.
This is where you get them from.
You know, like just showing an old schoolmate. He's like, oh, he's me in my YouTube channel. Like, I bumped into a guy called Besto. He's a polite person, just like old schoolmate. Just like, somebody get me away from this man.
Yeah. Why do you smell funny?
Mm.
We haven't done it yet, but hopefully it lines up. Jonathan Liu. First time I've ever spoken to Jonathan Liu, which is exciting. Wonderful writer for The Guardian. And here he is right now, Jonathan Liu.
Jonathan Liu is a sports writer at The Guardian. Like so many, we're long-time admirers, and it's an honour that he'd make the time to join us today. And genuinely, when I was put in touch with him, I really thought I was hassling him for about 3 or 4 weeks before getting him on. But then I just had a sigh of relief because when we got online, Johnny, you said you had at least heard of us. So, you know, we're away.
A long time listener, first time caller. But, you know, there's, I've, you know, all the merchandise, all of the various accoutrements. I am a fully, you know, signed up member of Grade Cricketer Inc., the corporation, the kind of the digital brand. No, it's a behemoth. It's made its way all the way over here, and I'm very honoured to. I'm equally honoured to be here.
All right. Well, you were there. Let's get to the cricket.
Can I call you Johnny? I know everyone who knows you call you Johnny. Can I call you that? Or, I mean, are we on that level?
Yeah. Yeah, okay. That's fine, Johnny.
Okay, that's, thanks.
My mum's calling me John. My friends call me Johnny. And okay. People on the internet call me other things.
Yeah, you know, been there. Hi, Johnny. Well, it's the day after India England. It's quite tempting to couch these games like this in the broader context of India's ascent to infinite cricketing dominance. And so it's easy to forget there was an opposition as well. You were at the ground yesterday. Should England be disappointed they let it slip, or were they just swallowed up in the Indian avalanche that we're all helpless to stop?
I think they will be disappointed because there wasn't anything inevitable about India's win. I know, you know, targets of 369 are basically theoretical, but the conditions were there for them to bat out the day, certainly with Hamid and Burns and Milan at the crease. There was a really decent chance that they could have just seen off the old ball, seen off the new ball, and then, you know, it would have got very desperate for India very, very quickly. But as we've seen over the last few years, they are just not good enough to do that. England don't do that. England haven't batted out the last day of a game for a draw since Auckland in 2013. I think every other test nation, pretty much every other test nation, has done it since. It's just not a thing they do anymore. So there was a feeling of inevitability, certainly when Hamid goes, and then when Pope and Bairstow get bowled by Bumrah in that unbelievable afternoon spell. Everyone, pretty much everyone in the ground, everyone who's watched English cricket for any period of time knows where this is going. I think it's India were of course hugely impressive, but there was a pattern to it that I think was really familiar to watchers of English cricket.
Mm. Do we know, Johnny, how Overton's arm is? Was it one of those ones where, just like Siraj dropping a catch, he had to feign injury to hide the shame, or is the arm going to need to be amputated? Which one of those two?
Well, I think the word is he's probably going to be fine. They might, you know, in the same way that Siraj had to kind of feign injury to preserve his dignity, Overton may have to feign injury to preserve getting, you know, he probably would be dropped at Old Trafford. I think, given the pitch is likely to be quite dry and takes some spin, I think Jack Leach is going to come in, and Overton would probably have to make way. So I think that would be the more diplomatic way, I think, of dealing with things. Yeah, you know, you got an injured arm, you just give that arm a break for a couple of months.
Yeah, I heard Ajinkya Rahane needs a rest as well. England's won one test in nine, and I think I read that it's their worst return at home since 99 yet, but it doesn't seem that bad to me. Like, that they've got the best batsman in the world at the moment, they've got the best all-rounder in the world, albeit unavailable. They've got a deep pace battery. I know many of them are unavailable too. And Dom Sibley's, you know, gone by the wayside for something a little more inspiring. They have so many mitigating factors at the moment, England. Do you think the results reflect where they, you know, really are as a test outfit?
That's an interesting point because, yeah, I mean, obviously the injuries, particularly when you take the four fastest bowlers out of any side, you know, Stone, Archer, Stokes, Woods, I guess, in the last test, and you know, any side is going to suffer. And I mean, the problem is not so much personnel, because England have played and lost with all of these players. They've played and lost with Stokes. They've played and lost with Root and before him, Cook, performing to a world-class level. I think the reason that this has not felt like such a shock is that this summer has been coming for a long time. They really sort of scraped by. They scraped a win. They scraped a 4-1 in 2018 against India. They kind of got away with it in the 2019 Ashes. So this is kind of a bit of a reckoning for them. And yeah, I mean, they do have talented players, but it's been a really long time since these talented players have had either the backup behind them to pick up the slack. I think the stat is that England have won four test matches this year and Root has scored a century in all of them. They haven't won a test match without Root scoring a century since last summer. And, you know, being able to cohere these players, you know, Bairstow came into the side again with no red ball practice and immediately gets promoted to five when Butler... So immediately gets promoted to five, gets dropped down to six again, has to take the gloves. And that's been the story. You know, as soon as somebody does well, as soon as a batsman does well, people want to promote him to number three. Can he open? And it's this kind of, nothing is settled. Nothing is settled or fixed. Everything is transient. And I think that's been the mood music of this side for quite a few years now.
Mm. Johnny, can I ask you a same theme, I suppose a little bit broader, like what kind of summer it's been for England? Because I wonder if that's sort of two part in that it seems like the ECB might have had a good summer, especially if you're an executive for that organization. Financially, very rewarting. You know, the hundreds were some form of success at least. But the playing, you know, the one day side, even with the C team, with, you know, an entire squad getting COVID, they still beat Pakistan. They played really well and they blooded some new players. So keep Mahmood's in the setup now. And that's exciting. But the test side, they lost against New Zealand and they're on the verge of losing another series in the same summer. So is it sort of a bit of a dichotomy between like what the actual summer has been for England?
I think that's right. I think at a corporate level, you know, especially given the financial ravages of COVID, it's been a raging success. You know, day five at the Oval was sold out in advance. It was sold out last week before the game had even started, which is, you know, it's kind of unheard of outside Ashes summers. The 100 has been a financial success. The grounds have been pretty much packed. So, you know, from that point of view, the interest in English cricket is still high. And I suppose in many ways, that kind of vindicates the ECB strategy of just throwing as much cricket at people as they can swallow. And, you know, never mind too much about the quality of the product, because certainly this summer, when people have been let out again, we've seen that they're not too fussed about the quality of the team that they're playing. They just want to get out and see some cricket. So that, I think, has contributed to this kind of confusion about who, you know, what's happening now, what is the focus, you know, between up to 2019, England had a very clear white ball focus. Before 2015, they had a very clear red ball focus. What's the focus of this team now? Is it, you know, promoting the 100? Is it, you know, is it the T20 World Cup coming up? Is it winning in the Ashes? Is it, you know, there's no real purpose to this team. And that's why, you know, players are getting shifted in and out in formats. That's why series are kind of mushing up into one another. And it's really hard to kind of to define any sort of narrative around English cricket as a whole. It's more kind of a constant noise, which I think is good for ringing tills, but not so conducive to producing winning teams.
Just in relation to the Ashes, Johnny, we've seen this series swing a few times now. So at any given point, you know, England have been either, you know, unable to bat and overly reliant on Anderson. And then all of a sudden Root's invincible and England have a pace battery and they're sneaking up on India, you know, and now it's gone back again and they're bad. So like this is against the backdrop of Australia not playing at all. So therefore our country has concluded that Australia will win the Ashes 5-0. Have England got us right where they want us?
No. I don't think England don't have anyone right where they want them, apart from it maybe India. I think I say this, you know, the Ashes has the feeling of two evenly matched sides, but as we so often seen, when you mix two evenly matched sides with home advantage, it becomes a trouncing. England haven't been good for a long time. And so I think certainly given that Australia have home advantage and given the fact that England may be traveling without, you know, the likes of Butler, Stokes, Moeen, I can't imagine that doesn't get sorted, but you know, it's not like the Ashes hadn't been played without a B teams in the past. So, you know, given the fact that, you know, the history is, you know, so thoroughly dictates that Australia should be favourites. I can't see England winning. at all. I can't see a path to winning. I can't see who's going to bowl the spin. I can't see who's going to take wickets with the old ball. I can't see who's going to make runs at the top of the order. Obviously, Joe Root will do something. You know, Joe Root will probably make a doomed 180 at Sydney in a crushing innings defeat. You know, England really specialises scoring 400 and getting beat by an innings. I think that's going to happen a couple of times. So yeah, I think the optimism level certainly on this side of the world is pretty low. But I mean, I don't know where Australia are at either. Apart from, you know, they're sort of getting bamboozled by various smaller nations on low turning wickets. But I don't know how relevant that is.
just a final one for me, Johnny. Just as a follow up to that, I read Stuart Jeffrey's review of the Fever Pitch football documentary today in The Guardian. He includes a quote from a philosopher, Mark Perelman, who argued that today media are all united to make sport inescapable so that everyday conversation is bloated with invasive logorrheic blather. So, you know, as a guy that covers both football and cricket, where do you think cricket sits in that theory? You know, it doesn't feel like it comes close to the Premier League in terms of its relentlessness, but some days it really does feel like there's just a lot of cricket a lot of the time.
Yeah, I mean, that's partly a function of scheduling, but it's mostly a function of social media. You can make something a 24-hour blather. You know, you can make whatever you want into a 24-hour blather. Just follow the right people and immerse yourself in it enough. Personally speaking, you know, I like both football and cricket. I've always preferred cricket, but the kind of the dictates of the job and the country that I work in mean that I spend about 80% of my time covering football. And so for me, you know, it's necessary. It's not just nice, it's necessary to actually take a break from, you know, 10 months of ceaseless football and cover cricket, which I much prefer. And, you know, after a regular sort of 3 or 4 month English summer, the reverse is also true. You know, I like getting back to football and getting away from, you know, from this noise and into the other noise. And I think, you know, it's a good strategy for people. I don't think it's a great idea to just immerse yourself in one conversation for so long. I mean, that's how, you know, that's how, you know, that's how 5G phone masts end up getting burnt down. You become immersed in this echo chamber very quickly, and it does feel ceaseless, and it does take a toll on your mental health and your sanity. So switch off social media and you know, find you know, Australia's very good at this, I think. You know, you have your cricket in the summer, and then you have your various other sports where men wrestle each other at various other times of the year, and you go to a different state and they're all into something. You know, it seems like you've got things pretty much sorted there.
I think that's a good answer, Johnny. Thanks so much for joining us. No, I do. We should do football because when you were talking about one thing for many years, it felt a bit close to home.
This is the third show we put out today.
Yeah, you said burn down 5G towers. What about just burning down nets?
Yeah.
Thanks so much for joining us, mate. Let you get on with the rest of your day. I hope we catch you out here in Australia if you get a chance to make it out.
I would love that. Yeah, cheers. Thanks for having me.
Thank you very much for the time, Jonathan Liu. Did that happen? Exactly. I always get scared because things can fall through, as you know. Pez, let's get on to Australia. And, you know, what I respect about this leadership and governance, not the federal government, I'm talking about CA, is that they've told the Taliban, hey, we're playing this game, okay? We're playing this game.
A couple of custodians have just said, I saw a headline saying that, like, you know, custodians issue warning to Taliban.
Oh.
Taliban.
That would be the politest email anyone's ever sent. To whom it may concern.
Dear sirs,
I hope this email finds you well.
Concerning the game at Belle Reve.
David Boone will meet you at,
You say Bin Laden lived around the corner for some nets?
Yeah, he did.
Yeah. I wonder if he had a net.
Got the Taliban down there, the Salamanca markets. Head down to Mona.
Yeah.
Sure, they'd be welcome. Yeah, so that's I mean, there's a bit of chat there that game might not happen, though I believe anyway that the Taliban are all clear. Well, they're all good to go with the test team, with the men's test team. Anyways, other concerns obviously with humanitarian issues, civil rights for women especially.
Well, with women. The last time Taliban were in power, they didn't permit women to engage in sport or education. So people are like, well, what's the moral stance if you engage with a nation that you know, doesn't allow women to play?
Yeah, yeah.
That's a moral question. The Premier's involved.
Yeah.
Peter Gutwin, I think, and he said he's got some concerns about whether the game should go ahead on that basis, but he's going to talk to the local Hazara community, see what they think. And, you know, he wondered whether it was still a confidence-building thing that they play the game.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. We talked to Fawad Ahmed. We've already talked to him. He's got a view on that at the end of that chat as well.
But if we can just chuck some, like, Bet365 ads around that, we can just get that game going, can't we?
Yeah. I would have thought so. And there's some other shit about, like, what flag are they going to fly as well. That does sound scary. Some, like, Islamic Jesus Emirate of Afghanistan Christ. Shit. But I don't know.
So bowl first, you reckon? Sorry.
Yeah, cool. I don't know
can
why.
Can you put the Taliban to me in great terms?
Was Bin Laden good off the pads? I can burn the net down if he had a bad fucking net. Do you want to steer clear of that?
Fuck it, hell.
Ah, well.
Mate, let's talk about scarier stuff. James Faulkner's BBL contract saga. No, he was on SEN Hobart Radio down there in
He sort of Tassie. Woke up to this on Twitter, didn't it? Like, it was just all these like quotes, like Bin Laden,
Bin Laden, yeah,
Bin Laden and James Faulkner. Yeah, is that a net?
Fucking hell, yeah.
No, it's been a long night. James Faulkner, like the neighbors style soap opera around his talking about getting knifed in the back and shit. Yeah.
The offer they gave him was disrespectful, embarrassing.
Yeah. So the thing with Faulkner, he was on Jack Riewoldt and Tim Payne's radio show in Hobart.
Payne and Jack.
Just imagining, you were saying the other day, just imagining.
Jordan Henderson having a radio show on Merseyside.
Yeah, already Australian captain.
Yeah.
He's got my dad got my radio show. I guess they're not playing any cricket.
Yeah. He's got time for a part-time job.
He does, yeah.
Or a full-time job.
So Faulkner was saying the first offer they gave him for the Hurricanes, I think, was embarrassing. They went through his manager. They didn't even want to do it directly to him.
Yeah.
Then they upped it a few times, but he left a really sour taste. I don't know. I get the impression he felt like he was being lowballed out of Tassie cricket. And they're very proud in Tasmania. And he's obviously jumped on the line. He's expressed very fully his disappointment with the coach and mates who've stabbed him in the back.
Mm.
They've used his injury against him, according to Faulkner. Mm-hmm. It's very sad seeing those things, you know, play out in public. Who you know, you never know the full story with all those kinds of things.
Sure.
So that's why Adam Griffith is invited onto this show. But yeah, it's the dark side of someone coming towards the end of their career a little bit as well, and you know how organisations try and manage you out and how they do that. And it sounds like it's not being done very well.
It just feels like another chapter in like a very slow demise of one of Australia's brightest white ball players that we had in for like this. He had the hottest of hot hands for like 3 years, James Faulkner, between about 2012 and 2015. He was the man of the match in the World Cup winning final 2015 in Australia. Remember, like he won games against England at the Gabba, batting with like Clint Mackay at number 11.
Slog.
He was taking wickets, slow balls, lower order runs. He was a fucking incredible player for us. And then it just stopped really quickly. And he was down there in Tassie, and then he sort of just popped up in the BBL and sort of the consciousness anyway, because he stopped playing Shield cricket and he's playing grey cricket down or Premier cricket down there in Tassie as well. But it's just a really weird demise where you just feel like I don't know what's happened in his life or if there's been injuries or if there's been other struggles. I'm not sure, but it just feels like here's this guy who was like a world-class performer in one-day cricket, especially 50-over cricket. And it's like, what about him to James Faulkner? That's sad, isn't it?
He'll probably get another club. I mean, he's been playing good BBL cricket. Well, he's
in the PSL. I mean, he plays around the world. I mean, the Big Bash isn't that high a standard where like, oh, do you want a guy who plays in the PSL? Nah, not really. Nah, not really.
But he was
sort of saying he wasn't that interested in going to another club.
It was on Tim Payne's show. I noted Payne on that show. And, you know, this is what happens when these guys who are still playing, or even in the case of Gilchrist, whose words carry so much gravitas.
Yeah.
You do a show every day, you have to talk about what's going on.
Yeah.
And I noted Payne's comments about England coming over for the Ashes.
We do a show every day. It doesn't carry the same weight.
Hey, these guys played threes. See their my cricket? Careful what you say there, boys.
We're doing dick jokes most of the day.
Payne said an Ashes series for an Australian cricketer is like a final series for an AFL footballer.
Oh, okay, I understand now.
And that's just so generous to the AFL, isn't it? Anyway, we defer to them at all costs.
Do what we want, yeah. Should we, you guys fine if we play our matches on this on this pitch here?
Yeah, that's right. What if we just change the pitch a little bit? It's not going to do as much with the ball, but you just get guys who buy 140. It's all good.
Sort of kill the game here a bit, but
Right. Oh, the ball's got there's no character to the wicket or anything like that, but we can play a bit of footy on it. But he was talking about the England guys coming out here. There's still chat about what that's going to look like. And he said, this is his quote, for you to say I'm going to play most of the season. Oh, he's talking about finals footy, that kind of analogy. I'm going to play most of the season, then because I have to do 2 weeks quarantine, I'm not going to play in the finals. I'm not going to have a crack at winning a premiership medal or an Ashes urn. I find staggering. So he's talking about England guys pulling out.
Yep.
I know people are all slightly different. We've all got different circumstances, but, and my wife would hate me saying this, I would quarantine for a year to play an Ashes series. That's how much I want to play an Ashes series.
How many years? A long time.
Yeah, got kids.
You know, hotel room.
Kids mustn't be sleeping. I feel it. But I would have loved to have quarantined for the last year in a lot of ways as well.
Yeah, fair enough.
I just thought that was a little bit insensitive to the experiences of guys who've, like England, have been backs against the wall, playing wall-to-wall cricket.
Yeah.
In quarantine, away from families.
Yeah.
I think Payne was questioning whether it was 10 guys who didn't want to come. I think he was more saying, like, I'd be surprised if there are that many England guys who aren't keen as fuck to come and play the Ashes. So that's probably how he meant it.
But I don't know what it's like to be broadcasting and, like, wanted to send, like, fucking subs, like, when I'm speaking. Like, he's having a pop at them, really, isn't he? That's what's going on. He's, like, communicating what he's not really communicating.
I want to play the Ashes more than you.
Yeah. You're weak and not, it's already sledging, you know? It's just what it feels like. I mean, the main thing we have to worry about is, like, some cunt on YouTube saying, why are you wearing that shirt today?
Yeah.
That's basically, like...
That is the main thing.
It's the main thing I have to worry about. Sorry, I haven't been a subliminal.
What did he say? which shirt was it? Yeah.
You know which one.
I thought the mauve looked good.
Hey, Bangladesh, New Zealand is a series that's going on. And New Zealand are taking their absolute D team over there. And the series is 2-1 as it stands. Unless there was a game overnight, was there?
No, it wasn't.
It's 2-1. We're obviously right across this. But low scores continue. Now, we spoke to Simon Dool a couple of weeks ago, didn't we? And he was saying, like, in preparation for the World Cup in the UAE, he suspects that it won't spin nearly as much as what it does in Bangladesh and has been for the last, nearly a month now, given Australia lost their 4-1. But there's just seems to be like this sort of it's not an inkling, but it's, you understand what I'm saying, like that, New Zealand have got bowled out cheaply here as well. Therefore, like, it was okay that Australia got bowled out cheaply there as well. Like, when the fuck have Australia ever compared themselves to New Zealand? And then that being like the marker of like, oh no, things are actually okay with Australian cricket, because look, you know, England have lost their series as well, and like, oh, New Zealand are doing this, you know. So it's like,
well, there's been, you know, there's been a lot of handbags thrown in the media in relation to the direction of the Australian cricket team, and those who are in support of the incumbents remaining in charge, you know, are pointing to anything they can to suggest that the Australian side is actually going well. I mean, it's very clear that they're not. The players have said so. That's not conjecture.
Yeah. And the players hate it. That as well.
That's more of a read between the lines, but it's true.
Yeah.
And so, you know, you sort of, it makes you sigh when you see stuff like that. You see people go, we'll see, New Zealand got rolled for 60. Mm. We should be happy with our 62. Mm. That's a grim state of affairs.
Yeah.
Especially if New Zealand go on to win a few more games. But like, it also makes you sigh because you think, you just know that like, the next time Australia does anything good, the men's team does anything good in cricket, it will be used as a real like, fuck you to anybody who suggested that things mightn't be going as optimally as they could or should in the side. But we've got all of that ahead of us because despite many protestations from the playing group and many others, it's been decided that the incumbents will remain in charge, and let's see what happens.
So do you want to just go to Dale Steyn? Just quick one.
Yeah,
quick,
please.
Quick one,
yeah,
quick
yeah.
one before well, before we get to Farwad Ahmed.
Yes.
Dale Steyn retiring from all cricket. We were talking about this in the live stream last night. Was just the numbers of it, like averaging 22.
It's everything. It's full package. It's full package.
Skateboarding, the surfing.
439 wickets at 22.9, so it's like enough said.
Yeah.
But in case that's not enough for you.
In
also,
case it's not.
Also vibes, you know, like he brought anger, he brought vibes, he brought fear.
Yeah.
It was the fast twitch of the thing for Stain. Like
He's a whippet.
You know, sometimes you watch quicks on TV and like you can't immediately discern that they're really fast, even though the speed gun tells you or the reaction of the batsman tells you.
Yeah, yeah.
You're under no illusions with Stain. Mm. And it was very classical too. Like, it was fast twitch, but it was beautiful shape.
Oh, how's the action on it?
Mate, the action on it, the
you
shape
set
on
your watch
it.
To it.
Mate, bumpers, Yorkers, and then just classic outswing. Nicks,
you know,
like guys that slip, keeper standing far back. What do you need from a quick? Do you need anything else?
Not for me.
Not for you.
Thank you, though. Thank you. I'll
do anything for you?
You know, how like Brett Lee had a very aggressive celebration when he wasn't like doing the sort of kick up in the air with 2 feet. He was doing like the chainsaw thing.
Oh yeah.
Stain had the same thing, but why was it scarier with Stain? Because Brett Lee's got some gorgeous eyes.
Because it was veins. He actually had varicose veins popping through his neck and his face. When he did, that's literally the answer. I know you're asking rhetorically, but the answer is veins, which is that's probably a genetic issue that he's got, but some people find that attractive.
When I think of Stain, I think of him just nicking off Clark heaps of times and bowling Brad Haddin. And just like, Michael Clark was a beautiful nicker of the ball.
Yes,
like
he was.
When he caught behind, geez, that looks good. It looked as good as what it feels when you nick off when you shadow bat, which is the right thing
to do.
That's
really good observation.
Square yourself up.
Beautiful nicker of the
and
ball.
And Stain had such a symmetrical action, and Clark was also so technically pure.
Mm.
And it wouldn't even be nicked off. Yeah, he might have just pushed his hands out of fraction, but it looked so good.
Getting Haddin was good too, because Haddin had some of the best hands in international
Very
cricket.
Very still base, Brad Haddin.
Still base, but if you were quick enough, like if you beat a threshold with Haddin, his feet stopped moving, so he would be splayed peg stepmum's legs. Like... You know what I mean? Like if you were too quick for Haddin, it would be fucking pegs everywhere.
Yeah.
And
split pegs.
Yeah. Split pegs.
Step mum's legs. Yeah.
It's fucking bingo night.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he would nick like that as well. His hands would just be a little bit out in front of him. Mm. And I feel like that was Stain as well. That was just what Stain could do.
On like fast wickets, Graham Smith's covering 1-3. Boucher's there. He's saying some shit.
There's that one where he bowls somebody and there's stump mic. There's a stump cam, and he's like looking into the camera, like pointing his finger at you, like he's just hit you as well.
Yeah.
Good stuff.
What a player. Yeah. I wish he won more stuff for South Africa. I mean, it's a great South African team. I mean, they were the number
one. He's been in the World Cup.
I guess so. Remember Grant Elliott hitting for a massive six in the semi final? That's unfair to highlight that. One of the lowest moments of his career, I'm sure. Hell of a shot that from Grant Elliott.
Hey, good shot. The memory just does what it does.
Yeah, don't bowl there. Mm.
And it puts away a lot of memories too.
it suppresses a lot of things deep down inside. That all boil over one day in a shopping centre.
Hey, speaking of shopping centres, he goes.
Yeah.
Our great mates at Budgie. Guess what? We're not talking about custom design anymore. You know what we're talking about?
Socks.
As Lieutenant Dan said. The most important thing. These socks, he goes. Budgie Smugglers doing socks, I should say.
Budgiesmugglers.com. Use code.
They're Australian merino wool, right?
Yeah.
We've got them. They're fucking good.
Yeah.
They're right here
in the studio.
They are in the studio, if you're watching that.
Little pink number there.
They feel wonderful.
Little blue number here with some chilies.
On the feet. Merino wool is unique and it absorbs odor caused by bacteria, trapping their smell and keeping them from building up. So you can wear merino wool odor resistant clothing for longer without having to worry about smelling.
Yeah.
That
would have come in handy for most of the guys I play cricket with.
Yep.
And I sort of distance myself from that as well.
We've been asked to model these with our feet. And I think that might be for the next episode. So we're a little bit behind the eight ball there.
Sure.
I mean, if people want some feet stuff, how do you go feet wise?
No good.
Care to elaborate on, or do you want to move on?
I don't know what you're asking me.
Just how do you feel about your feet? Where would you model your feet?
No good. No good.
I got.
No good.
The way you say it is so, like, it's such an Aussie way of like, you sort of say it with a pace that's encouraging me without saying it to start talking about something else. You know, No, no, good. Just the way the eyes linger. Even my feet, I have like a gap between my like my big toe and my second toe. There's just, it looks like there's a toe missing. Just a big, I don't know.
Yeah.
Big thing going on there.
Talking about feet stuff now?
Yeah, yeah. Which is, well, we're talking about Budgies Moreno. I mean, you can cover up your feet with these socks. That's the point.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's the point.
Yeah.
So Moreno will sock
you
know, run.
Is there any people are going to ask for feet pics now?
No.
Seven.
I think your DMs and mine are quite different in relation to TJC. Oh,
I'll be the judge of that.
Just, okay. BudgieSmuggler.com.
Here he is, the great man, Fawad Ahmed.
Well, don't even bother listing the teams this man has played for. He has played for everyone. And in doing so, he's an international. He's a Sheffield Shield winner. He's a BBL winner. He probably has medals for many other franchises too in many other countries. He's also got a master's in political science and international relations, I believe. Unless, again, you know, he's done some really good media work and he's got that out there and it's not true. He's one of the oldest roosters on the circuit as well. So we'll look after him. He's from the Brotherhood of Legspin. And because of all of the above, it's our sincere pleasure to welcome Fawad Ahmed to the Great Cricketer. Fuzz, g'day.
Thanks, Matt. Thank you, Sam. So thanks for having me. So I'm really excited. You know, I've been following you guys for a while now. So yeah, it's an absolute fun. You know, you bring, especially on the social media, especially on the Twitter. I got only Twitter. So yeah, to see a lot of stuff. So well done you guys, especially in this bloody pandemic and the lockdown situation. So yeah, thanks for having me.
You're welcome, mate. You know, it's been so fascinating doing some research on you, and I know you've done many interviews to this effect. We always ask people, you know, what's their relationship to grade cricket? And it just occurs to me with you, you know, like most grade cricketers sort of studying at uni and working at Officeworks part-time. You were working in a warehouse and awaiting a verdict on your asylum claim while you were playing grade cricket. So can you tell us about your relationship to grade cricket?
Oh, it was amazing. You know, I was not even a grade cricketer. I was a park cricketer at that time. So playing for recreational cricket for Hoffa's Crossing. So when I arrived to Australia, I didn't have any idea of what I'm going to do. Language barrier, proper culture barrier. The whole system was something. I was like in a different world. I was like, if you take someone like on the Mars and he will be just lost. I knew a little bit about Australia just because of cricket, watching cricket when I was younger, you know, from childhood. So that was the only thing. But yeah, in reality, when you go somewhere and then you experience in a real life, it's completely different story. Starting getting a bloody fine from the on the train with the wrong ticket, you know, on the first day, on the first ride on the train. And it was just kicked off from there. And yeah, finding jobs, you know, working on the in the apple picking on the fields and going to far, I think it was Harcourt, I think it's before or after Bendigo in Victoria, 2.5 hours drive from each side, working in cold winter. It was weird winter for me because usually it's summer back in Pakistan, and it was so weird talking to people back in Pakistan and family. It is June, but it's very cold and short days. It was, yeah, out of from nowhere. So, yeah, finding job, find some warehouse jobs, you know, different jobs and playing for Hoppers Crossing. It's called park cricket or recreational cricket, community cricket, I would say. And then trying when I start bowling really well and went to the one of the bowling net session with the Australian squad, you know. So I thought, I can still bowl. I have something left there. You know, there is some fuel in the tank and I might be lucky to get there and to play maybe a game or two by that time with Bushranger.
Yeah.
And then I tried to get into the great cricket, you know, to play. And it was an absolute pleasure at that time to play great cricket because in a start, I tried to get into great cricket, but no one said we're going to support you or pay you with your visa or find you a job, you know, that says great cricket is just to perform well and it's like a stepping stone to play for Victoria. And then, yeah, this how I went to Hoppers Crossing and then finding my way back to In the start, I did went for the trial with Melbourne Uni, but then eventually I got in there and played a few games for them.
Fawad, before you got to Hoppers Crossing, I'm just reading it was a great interview that Will McPherson, who's a friend of ours, did with you in the Cricket Monthly magazine in 2016. And you say, just in terms of how you got into club cricket here, you tried to email every club saying I played first-class cricket in Pakistan, copy-paste, copy-paste. And do you understand that everyone plays first-class cricket in Pakistan, you know?
Honestly, not everyone. But the thing is that, you know, like I did something wrong. I wasn't sure, you know, it was the start of even getting into the email stuff as well. And I put like a CC as well. And I put emails of the president. And it says, you're sending the same email to everyone. So I got a reply from so you copy and you are adding all the president from other clubs. You know, it would have been like not even just great cricket from subbies. From park cricket, and it was just everyone. So it's just not like, you know, so it was funny. And then I think it was from Northcote Cricket Club and the Dragons president replied me. He says, mate, you are saying this to everyone. I would love to play for your really nice club. You know, I want to, you know, play and represent your club. And I've been, you know, following the club, you know, what's happening. You know, I was literally going on the website of every club, you know, how the club's going, you know, but I didn't know what's going on. What's great cricket, what's park cricket, what's community cricket. So, yeah, at that time it was funny, you know, I got some replies, but it never worked out, you know. Eventually, I met a friend at that time and he told me there is North Melbourne by that time is Greenwell Kangaroos right now.
Yeah.
They said they have a trials, you know, and they were just the start of the season, first ever. So I went there and went on the trials and
which the second did you bowl 11. In? Did you bowl in the third net? Or did you bowl in the net?
I didn't know. They said come. I think it was actually trials. It wasn't a training session.
Okay.
So they were trying out some new guys, you know, and there was their second 11 captain. He was moving back to Hoppers Crossing. So he played there for 10 years or something. And then he was moving back to Hoppers Crossing. And then he was there as well to look on the few boys. He might sneak some of them. Yeah? And I was batting nicely, bowling nicely. And then he says, what do you want to do? You want to play cricket? I said, yes, that's why I'm here. Even in VTCA, I think they were in third division, senior, North Division, North One. I think we were in North One or something. So we were third division, Hoppers Crossing. So I said, yes, I want to play. And he said, what you want to, how much money you want, you know? And I said, I don't know. I didn't know anything, you know? And I remember, I think they offered me $3,500. For the season, and they said, I want to work. I need to find a job and I want someone to support my visa process as well. And I said, if that's possible. And he said, we will find you work. And that never happened though, but they what they said, you know, at that time. And this is how I went to Hoppers Crossing. And even I didn't know at that time, is this like a VTC? What's the competition like? I thought it's going to be the same cricket. Like where was North Melbourne. So that's how I missed the first 2 years on great cricket. So, but I know it was amazing to play for Hoppers Crossing at that time. And I think it was the actual a stepping stone or pathway for me to get into great cricket, then Bush Rangers and then Australian setup.
Yeah, you took 90 wickets at 11 for Hoppers Crossing.
I'm shocked by that. I'm now going to reply to every Nigerian prince or emails just in case it's Fawad Alam. Fawad Aman on the other end.
I get those emails a lot as well from those older friends.
I mean, what are they expecting when you roll out? I mean, you just sort of turn up, you bowl a few googlies at training, and they think, oh yeah, this guy's worth about $3,500. I mean, like, did they realize that they had a literally already capped first class Pakistani cricket playing at that time?
Yeah, I did told him, but like as I spoke to the North Melbourne Cricket Club president, and he said, I said, well, I played recently. I just like literally left when I left Pakistan. I played 9 first class games and I bowled really well. I took wickets as well. And like a couple of fifers as well. And in a tough condition over there, especially like in Karachi, you know, the conditions are very good for batting. So I said, these are my recent, like, it's not like I played 5 years ago, 10 years ago, and I've been doing nothing. And now I want to play cricket here in Australia, but this is my recent. That was like 3 months ago. That's where I played, you know. And then they says, no, we wanna see you in nets, you know. And they said, we don't believe like whatever on internet, you know, like your stats or whatever they are. So when I went there, so he said, we are happy to have you, but we're not gonna give you anything, like no money, and no, like we can't promise you a job or anything. I said, well, I'm actually not here for cricket. I want to find a safe life, you know, to adjust myself. And now I need to find a way, you know. I was like, I'm a very hardworking person, you know, like I'm still working hard, you know, with the whole body, you know, to getting there and playing around the world good cricket, but just with the hard work. So I said, well, I will find my way, you know, into the system, how to find jobs, how to find a better place to play good cricket as well, and making new friends. Like everything was new to me, like friends and, you know, even playing cricket in a different system, and everything was new for me. So it was just to find my ways, you know, how to, I didn't even knew about the recruitment agencies, you know, how you can find a work, you know, and then getting a car, how to get a car and then license, you know, that was all those important things. So yeah, there was a reason. Yeah, they didn't knew when I went there to bowl in the nets, and they said, well, we would love to have you, you know. They said, the way you bowl, the way you bat, you know, but that's the only reason we can't pay you.
Yeah. Mm. Fawad, fast forwarding a little bit forward, you, according to, again, in Will's interview, you were coaching at the MCG, just looking at the Bush Rangers bat. You were just watching, and you went up to Simon Helmet, the coach at the time, and said, I just need to have a bowl at these guys. And he didn't know who you were. He looked you up and down. They sort of made it look like, you know, you were barefoot. I doubt that's the case. But what happened after that?
I was I was actually at the level 2 coaching course. They says, one day we're going to go and have a look on the training session, Bush Ranger training session. I says, oh, that's nice, you know. And I knew, like, who's Cameron White, who's David Hussey, Chris Rogers there. Maxie didn't play at that time, neither Finchie played. Peter Siddle was there. There was few guys there, you know, they played for Australia already. So, yeah, Simon is my coach now. He just told me the other day, who would have thought we're going to be together again in somewhere in Caribbean. So, he's our coach. So, I said, look, I went there and most people were just behind those nets, you know, near the rooms. And I did ask him, you know, he was down on the ground and I think he was getting the balls or writing something. He was just busy with something. And he said, well, Matt, can I bowl? And he says, he looked up and down to me. He said, what did you do? I said, I bowled spin. He said, what spin? I said, I bowled leg spin. He said, okay, come and bowl. So Bobby Coyne, I didn't know who was Bobby Coyne. And I thought he was tall and big, and I thought he's a fast bowler. The bowled first ball is went through the gap, indoor nets. You know, you don't think it's gonna spin that much, but it's went through the gate. Bobby Piney, and then I bowled the next one. I thought this is the first ball. Look, second ball, he's gonna go and play, but the spin bowled a wrong one. When I bowled a wrong one, and he got beaten outside. He went on the other way. And when I look back, so everyone is watching me, and then Shippy came up to me and he says, oh, what you doing here? And I said, well, I'm here for level 2 coaching. He said, no. Like in Australia, I said, I live here now, you know, permanently. I got here and I want to live here. And I want to play cricket. And then he said, who was coaching? I think, forgot the name. Someone was from Cricket Victoria. He was a coaching organizer, you know, like he was just teaching us everything. But he told him, yeah, he's going to stay with us. And then, I didn't play that season. It was June. I missed out on the season 2010. Came from Pakistan and no training whatsoever, no cricket. I was working at that time in the fields, you know, picking apples. And I bowled like for 40, 50 minutes. And I was so excited, you know, bowling those guys. Maxi was there, Finchie and Whitey. And it, for some reason, the ball was spinning big, you know, in indoor nets. You know, it was like unreal for some reason. So, yeah, there was a turning point. When I went back to the coaching class, I was almost done. I said, mate, I'm done. I can't be there. And I was literally falling asleep. I was tired when I went back to home. But the next couple of days, I couldn't move because I just bowled with no warm-up, with no exercise, nothing, without any training sessions. And then I got, I gave my number to Simon and he said, well, he said, could you come, you know, time to time and train with us, you know, because we don't have any spinners. And Dutchie Holland was struggling at that time with injuries. You know, he had like 3 reconstruction shoulders. Yeah, at that time, I was just so excited, even taking a time off from the job. You know, even I said, well, I'm going to go to train. And then was playing for Melbourne Uni, just T20. You can play as a T20 player. And then I was training with Uni, playing for Hoppers Crossing and training with Bush Rangers and plus working in the warehouse. Yeah, good memories. It's almost 11 years, 10 years now. It was 2011. So, yeah, amazing decade, amazing 10 years, you know, in Australia. I thoroughly enjoyed, you know, how I started. And it was amazing struggle. It was tough. It was really, really tough in every way, without far, far away, more than 10,000 miles away from family. Learning English, you know, it was learning all the slangs as well. It was so difficult in every way. And finding a job, finding a shelter, you know, getting a car or a license, you know, to be right on the road, you know, it was a hell of a journey, you know, but the things, for some reason, then the things happened very quickly, you know. I know I couldn't accept it that in a good way. I would say sometimes I still, when I'm at home and just for myself, and I feel that, like I'm still feeling that I'm missed out. I was lost in there. It was, everyone was talking. Next, Shane won taking. I took 7 wickets in the first game. I think six wickets in the second game, 4 or 5 wickets in the third shield game. And in the one day games, now when I realized, I went for like a couple of times against English line for 22 runs, 2 for 22, 2 for 23, like that. Mm. And now I realized it was bloody amazing, because just going from park cricket and playing against English line or in a domestic setup and performing that well. But then, when I got selected for Australia, traveling to England and then coming back with the citizenship problems with the media thing. And I think I was lost there in a sense, because I was struggling a lot with a lot of media stuff, you know, getting all those things. I couldn't get enough practice and those things before the games when I played, you know. But it is what it is, you know. Like I'm very grateful and thankful, you know, whatever happened, it happened for the reason. But yeah, it was amazing. It was really, really amazing, especially getting into that great cricket. Yeah,
you must feel like, Farwood, you know, it's lucky that those couple of balls to Rob Quiney came out well that day. Otherwise, you might be coaching twos at Hoppers Crossing. You know, it's good thing you didn't pick the wrong one. I was going to ask you. I've heard before that Damien Martin said that you were the best leg spinner since Shane Warne. We've had Shane Watson on the show before, who said that he thought that you were the best spinner to not play Test cricket for Australia. And that you were really mismanaged. I mean, what are your memories around coming into sort of the Australian team? I know you played for Australia 5 times, but into that Test team, especially around 2015, I think it was, during the Ashes there. You're in the squad, but you didn't quite get a look in. What are your memories around the Australian team in that time?
The memories, like I would say, now people realize about the mental stress and being alone. It was really tough journey for me, you know, like even in 2013, going back to Australia from the tours, I've been on the few tours, you know, with Aussie A, couple of tours to England, couple of times, then to Zimbabwe and South Africa, and performing really well on those tours, going back and you just taking a cab and going to empty house, you know, like, or different culture in Pakistan, you know, there's a massive reception. People come, the relatives, you know, like neighbors and your friends, and they will get together. And it's a bloody great achievement playing for your country, you know. and there was nothing like there, you know, like I missed a lot of things. And then when 2014, you know, it was a quiet year for me, and I went out, I played some club cricket in Holland and went on holidays, you know, to get refreshed, to get away from everything, all those media stuff and, you know, the hype and, you know, what happened, you know, like, and I went back and got relaxed, and then I took the most wickets for that season. I think I equaled the season with Nathan Lyon, 60 odd wickets, something, with everything all together. So I got picked in Australian squad. I was in the best head space. I thought I was bowling amazingly, you know, like, I remember these are the words from Brad Haddon. We were only 3-4 guys because Australian team were busy in the World Cup, and then they were on holidays. And then they asked me, I think myself, Brad Haddon, I think it was with Peter Neville. It was 2-3, you know, we were on 3-4 guys, and I was bowling in at Allan Borderfield and to Brad Haddon. Yeah, I was so excited, was so to go on the both West Indian tour and to Ashes, on Ashes tour, and to perform well. I think I bowled really well at Antigua against the West Indies A. And then the rain came in for some reason. Myself and both Nathan Lyon, we didn't bowl well. I remember, you know, and before that, I took 2 wickets in, I think, 3 overs. And then the rain came in, and then I think it was Carlos. Carlos was his start of his career, and he was just logging, you know. We were going there for test cricket, and he was logging everywhere. And he smashed, I think, more Nathan Lyon than me, but he smashed us. And then it was right in the media, electronic. Print, social media everywhere, that he's going to be carrying drinks for both tours, 4 months long tour, and he's not going to be playing. And I just honestly couldn't handle it. You know, I remember I was in Dominica, literally tears coming, and I was upset. You know, there was no one to come and hold me or support me, you know, and that's like what I'm talking about, the mental stress and those things, you know. And I knew that, you know, like being a normal person and as a sensible man, then you think that, whoa, who's going to take a second spinner to Ashes, you know? And no one, even if I'm a selector or a coach or a captain, I'm not going to take second spinner, you know? And I was actually, they usually take 15 or 16. I was the 17th guy just because I performed really well. They have to take me. So, and it was everywhere. He's going to be carrying this. He's going to never play again, you know, and it was everywhere just for some reason. And been getting, talking to selectors and, you know, like to the officials, Rod Marsh was there, was the recent chairman who had resigned. Trevor Hones. And yeah, this is, yeah, I'll go back and perform well and you will definitely get back. But I was upset with one thing, not with everything, but with one thing, especially when at that time, at the Ashes time, Aussie A tour went to India. They were playing at Chennai. Sock went there. I think he took in 2 games, 14 wickets or 13 wickets, something. Even, what's his name? Gurinder Sandhu took 4 wickets in the second innings bowling office, not fast bowling. And I said, look, I was talking to someone at that time, why they didn't send me over there? If we need you, if someone's getting injured, like Nat Lyon, we can call you back. It's 7 hours flight from India into England, you know, and you can just play there, perform well next to a trip, Bangladesh as well. You perform well there, you know, because you are the best spinner in the country, you perform well. So now Nathan Lyon is there, he's playing. We don't need you. You go there, play A tour. When I got back, got dropped from the state cricket. I was literally didn't went on the A tour, and it was all faded. And I went on the just playing Fred cricket for Melbourne.
Always there for you.
Yeah, I know where I have to come back. So yeah, it was tough at that time. There was the tough time, and then I realized, well, I didn't give up, you know. I think I still took 32 wickets that year in Shield cricket and I bowled really well. But I think it was a grand final or the before the grand final of that year, 15-16. I bowled the 73rd or 74th over of the inning. And Dutchie was bowling from one end.
Mm-hmm.
And then he took 7 for. No disrespect. He bowled really well. He deserved it. I know he's a great bowler. He's a class act. I know he had a lot of injuries. But then he went on the Sri Lanka tour then. At that time, when it came to 2016, I said, well, think wisely. It was more about wide world cricket, you know.
Mm.
And then and for next 15, 16, 17, 18, until 19, those 5 years, I think, as a spinner, I took the most wickets in the Big Bash as well, but never got a chance. Even I took 3 wickets against England in England in the only second T20. It was 3 for 25 something. And never played. The next game was against England in Australia again. But then I got a call, well, we will try someone else.
Mm.
That was the only response from them.
Mm.
Mm. Oh, there's a bit in that forward as well. I mean, I want to ask you if you think you were treated fairly, but I feel like that would be many, many more hours and a very complex conversation, you know. One thing I do want to ask, though, is I have read that apparently through this time in the Aussie side, you became quite friendly with David Warner, which is not something that I had expected, and that you're great friends and that you've been – that you gave each other plenty of stick and you'd often find yourself struggling to reply to him, at which point you then said, well, you'd stand no chance if I was sledging you in my first language.
Oh, you know, Bull Davies, he's a great guy, but he's strange, you know, that in a way, the way his whole career is, you know, sums up. But I had a really good, like I would say, in a way, understanding with him, you know, because he says he grew up in Western Sydney, and he been to like the school where all the people from subcontinent mostly, and he does know about religion as well, Islam, and he knows a lot of things. He grew up with Uzi as well, and they played together for a long time as well. So yeah, we have some amazing time together, you know, like either breaking fast together, or he took me on a lunch on an eat day as well with his family. So, and yeah, well, we hang out a lot together, especially on those two tours. It was a long tour, long four months tour. So yeah, it was amazing. Yeah, I've met some good friends, you know. I know I became a really good friend with Warner as well, because we played together for Sydney Thunder then, and then Pakistan, T10, everywhere together. So I played more with Watson than anyone else in Aussie squad. But yeah, had a great time with Poole. Yeah, it was amazing.
Well, speaking of you know, attacking quirky left-handed openers, you're obviously playing with St Kitts in the CPL at the moment, where Chris Gayle is the captain. I'm trying to get into the dressing room, Farwad. You know, metaphorically, I'm not actually trying to get into the dressing room.
That'd be funny.
That would be funny because I'm Jarvo now. You know, but he's 42 in a couple of weeks. Chris Gayle, I think he's 42 in a couple of weeks. Yeah. I mean, take us into the dressing room when Chris Gayle's giving a team talk. Is he still the prime alpha? Is he get pole position in the dressing room? Does Rihanna come into the dressing room? What's going on in the CPL there?
Oh, no, like with Rihanna, but yeah, he's still. DJ Bravo is the actual captain for us, but I think he still takes that leadership, you know. Chris been amazing, you know. I played with him in Canada. He was captain there as well. We won that competition. So I had some good time with him in Canada, but he's been amazing. Yeah, he's still leading from the front end. He's an old, you know, dog, but in a really good position, still hitting the ball better than anyone else. He struggled a little bit with the fitness, because pretty hard here and back-to-back games, you know. I think then World Cup and IPL's coming, then World Cup following. So a lot of cricket coming as well. So he's looking after himself as well. But yeah, he's been great so far. You know, he's a leader. He was captain in the last game as well. little bit more quieter than usual. His family's here as well, so. But yeah, he's been great. Yeah, he's been so good for the team. St. Kitts has been struggling for the last few years, but DJ came in and then Chris as well. They get together. They got some good players all together, you know, from overseas and from Caribbean as well. So we have a really good squad. We are on top of the ladder. We lost the last two games, but we have some injuries. I think we will bounce back in the next three games, but we're still on the top of the table.
But I suppose, and this is his final one from me, you know, everything that we've been talking about is really not important in relation to what's actually going on around the world, in particular in Afghanistan at the moment. I know you, media was reporting that, you came here because you fled the Taliban, you know, and now the Taliban's back in Afghanistan. And there's questions about what's going to happen with the test match and what's going to happen with the women's team. I mean, what's your viewpoint, or what has been your viewpoint, I suppose, on what's been going on and the future of Afghanistan cricket, and even more broadly than that?
There was a massive difference. It's still a massive difference between what was happening in Pakistan and Afghanistan, you know. So there's a completely two different things, you know, like TTP and Taliban from Afghanistan. So they are completely different. They were their goals and their whatever they were, that was completely different. But when it comes to cricket, I think I know a lot of Afghani cricketers. They're pretty close to me, and we have spoken before. I think they're all fine with it. So they says we don't see any problems, you know, so far. They have moved on with the transition period of selecting a new chairman. You know, they did say that the women's gonna play cricket as well. So that's very positive for that, especially both women and men's cricket as well, and even the other sports as well. So I know it's chaos. I know, but if it's they are fighting right now, but there was no fight at that time. I know people were leaving Afghanistan. You know, there are. Because they wanted to find a safe place, but they were thinking about what happened 25 years ago in Afghanistan when they came in. But they now saying they are completely different. They're understanding, you know, they learn a lot in those 20 years, you know. So might be, I don't know. Only the time will tell you, you know, what's going to happen. But whatever they are saying, it's actually very positive in a sense, you know. Although there are different stories, you know, how they came in. I know there was no fight, but the evacuation of the Americans, you know, of the all the troops, you know, even the Australians there were there, and then they leaving Afghanistan like that, and then the Taliban taking over, you know, that's a completely different story. But if you look whatever they're saying, if they will do the same thing, I think that's very positive, because they're going to be in charge right now. I don't know how it's going to change unless American attacking again. I don't know, but at this stage, it's going to be there for long time, because they came by power, and they're going to be there unless someone else fighting them, or maybe they will be here and there in all Afghanistan, like the way it's happening in Panjshir Valley. There is a massive, you know, like a battle over there. So at this stage, I think the under-19 team is on the way somewhere. I think they went through Pakistan. They're flying somewhere. I think they're playing somewhere. I don't know. But I have seen somewhere a little bit. And I think they, at this stage, they're all good. They want to continue with everything, and they want to have support, especially from the bigger countries, you know, to revive the country, and hopefully they will be on the road.
Fawad Ahmed, thanks so much for that answer, and also for the broader interview, mate. I know we've taken up a lot of your downtime with back-to-back cricket at the CPL. Mate, thanks for your story. Thanks for everything you've given Australian cricket as well. And I know you're an old rooster, but you're still kicking on. You've probably still got more BBL medals in you, and you're going to be spinning more webs as time goes on. So really appreciate it, mate, and we'll catch you next time.
No worries, mate. Thanks for having me.
Hashtag AskTGC, Pearsy lad. Now, do you want to read this one?
Yeah,
it was sent to you. Do you want to do the backstory to it?
Or? Oh, it's a little bit of a backstory. Well, thank you to everybody who writes in AskTGC questions. And we appreciate how they come in. And we also appreciate that we've never really been specific about where we'd like them to come in. We just go and grab them. Especially he goes, I should say, with respect, hoovering them up from wherever, you know, wherever you can send them on the internet. I got a text from my cousin who doesn't really listen to the show.
Perfect.
Wonderful relationship with him. Good man. I was going to say good boy because it's sort of in my head. He's younger than me.
Okay.
And there's other therapy stuff there. But he's a good man, and he got in touch with me to say he's a friend of his, loved the show, and really wanted to submit an Ask TGSC. So he sort of got my number.
That's so unnecessary. There's several different channels.
It.
Sure.
He wanted it in. And so
I think he was letting you know that he knows one of the guys from the Great Cricketer.
Do you? Okay. Toby Miles writes in. Now I'm just checking he's not asked for this to be anonymous.
Well, too late now.
He writes in, "Hi, boys. I'd like to draw on a couple of points of discussion you've had recently for this, including the idea of the unscrupulous use of footmarks on Uluru." Back to the feet again. We're talking about footmarks on Uluru in the Patreon show.
Just like, yeah, that's right.
Yeah, it's just people walking up Uluru.
Or was it YouTube? I was one of them. Yeah.
Walking up Uluru, we're just saying, yeah, it's just footmarks.
It's footmarks.
To preface, this story is grim and perhaps a little bit lowbrow, but I'm wary of the depths he goes he's willing to stoop for content. So there's a preface for you. I live in a country outback town in New South Wales. Cricket here is proper bush. Mm. Last year, a guy got 50 in a singlet. If you want cordial at the tea break, you fucking drive 2 hours to Dubbo and you get it. You get the vibe. This town's one pub is the social hub of the cricketers, and occasionally I get into verbal stoushes at the pub with some of the more stubbornly conservative members of the public. Yeah. After hearing you link cultural icon Uluru to cricket so seamlessly recently, it reminded me of a disagreement I'd had with a more senior local when the NT government banned climbing the rock at the end of 2019. A good decision. Oh, who the fuck do I know? I'll set the scene with the usual rabble and Channel 9 News, brackets, they play Sky there now, close brackets, blaring in the background, some official announcing the closure. Okay, so this is now read like a script, right? Punter says, "Fuck me." Me. "What's wrong, Heath?" Punter. "Can't do anything anymore." Me. "How so?" Punter. "Climb Ayers Rock." Me. "Would you, mate? That's not really on. I mean, it's a bit disrespectful, isn't it?" Punter says, "I would again. Won't be able to now." Me. "You've climbed it?" Punter. "Yep, about 15 years ago. Took the kids in that." Me. "How was it?" Punter. "View was good." Me. "The experience. Was it actually worth it?" Punter. "Yep, it was good." Me. "Righto." Pause. I'm just going to go back and forth now. "Shat myself, but." Maybe you should be me.
Too late now.
Okay. "Sorry? On the way up, I shat myself." You pooed your pants. "Had crook guts from servo food. Slipped in it a bit. Got to the top, though." Slipped in it. "Jesus Christ, mate." And Punter just nods. "Hey, what'd you do?" "Took my undies off when I reached the top. I left them up there, but..." I was aghast, and immediately numerous questions were swarming through my head. Have I been in this town too long? Were Heath's soiled underpants a driving force behind the long overdue decision to stop people climbing? With this image now implanted in my head, would I ever turn up again at local level? Yes was the answer to that last question. Scored for the following season. Whilst this story to many could symbolise and perfectly capture the ignorance and arrogance of white Australia, and it probably does, could you please put the debacle into grade terms? We should have back and forth that script. I realise that.
Well, hindsight. Thanks, Toby, for the question. Now, I presume the guy that he spoke to, he's referred to him as Punter. I presume that wasn't Ricky Ponting. That couldn't be an easy mistake to make. Ponting Wines, though. This is an ad for Ponting Wines. I think this story is actually about him turning up four times the following year wearing a singlet. This is one of the most...
You found this quite disgusting.
I found this one of the most...
You found this vile.
I found it vile in the sense that, okay, guy shat himself. It wasn't that. It was the complete disrespect to the Indigenous population. And we were talking before about, like, okay, climbing the rock, no good. Indigenous people have a strong connection to it. I do not. I think it's a nice thing, and I've never actually been to it. I would like to go see it. I don't need to climb it. Nothing to see out there anyway. Punter says view was good. The disrespect shown to this incredibly important heritage landmark of the indigenous population. It's like, yeah, shat myself. I took my underwear off and I just left it up there.
Oh, it's just hate, really.
Yeah.
It's just hate.
It's, yeah. So I find it vile in that respect. I mean, who hasn't shat themselves at some sort of theme park?
I was going to say, I mean, they've just won, India have just won the crucial fourth test to go 2-1 up against England away from home.
Yeah.
Our own captain shat himself when we did that.
That's not spoken about enough.
Perhaps the punter was just taken after the skipper.
Yeah, in homage to Tim Payne.
We're all shitting ourselves, aren't we?
How come no one's spoken about that? Like, that's just not really a story. We tried to pick it up and it was like, yeah, that was the thing that happened. We asked Travis Head, we asked.
Yeah, I actually felt quite gross just talking about it. You know?
Yeah, I mean, this is... I don't know what to do with this. I mean, yeah, so I just found it vile and I was like, what the fuck is this cunt doing? That's what I thought.
Well, you've just put it into grade terms.
Yeah, what the fuck is this cunt doing? It's disgraceful.
Yeah.
Does that do it justice?
Congrats on the 4 tons, Toby.
Yeah, well done, Toby. What about it?
Just cannot remember if you wanted it anonymous. Well, Toby, you'll be right. People don't care about you as much as you think.
Given Farward went for, I think we've got enough time here, Pez. Given the interviews in the show as well. All right, thank you so much to Jonathan Liu. Thank you so much for Farward as well for joining us over there in the CPL. Thank you so much for getting around us for the last little bit. The fifth test starts on Friday. Hashtag RCDC Friday is also out on Friday. And some stuff on YouTube as well. You know where to find us all over the internet. We'll see you next time on the Great Cricket Podcast. Cheers.